I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I guess this hour wrote a very interesting piece that caught our attention titled Teacher Pay Around the World. American teachers are underpaid, so starts the article. And it's an international comparison. He writes, even against modest paying Finland, American teachers are underpaid. If we wanted to raise the relative salaries of American teachers to the level seen in Finland, we'd require a 10% raise for primary school teachers, an 18% raise in lower secondary, and a 28% raise for upper secondary school teachers. We'll do international comparisons and why this information may be important. Why is it important how much a teacher makes? One of the questions of this hour. Our guest this hour is Professor Dick Startz. He's a professor of economics at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and author of the aforementioned article about teacher pay around the world, which appeared in the Brown Center Chalkboard, a Brookings Institution's educational blog. I have a feeling we'll be hearing from a lot of teachers this hour, and so let me give you the phone number right off the bat. It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, where we love to read your messages, and we have several coming in already on this topic, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Dick Startz, thank you very much for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. So I started with those Finland statistics. We'll go to other parts of the world in a moment, but we look at Finland as this educational model. We've done several shows about how good education is there and how teachers are held in such high esteem. They're not making that much more than Americans, but it is a lot more when you look at the percentages, isn't it?
Yep, it is. Now, there's something important, I just to keep the science straight, that I need to say, that when we're talking about comparisons, what I did was I looked inside a country. So I looked in the United States and said, what do teachers get paid compared to other college graduates in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
In Finland, what do teachers get paid compared to other college graduates in Finland? And that's the comparison by which the U.S. doesn't look too good.
Mm-hmm. And you looked at how many countries in the world?
Well, what I actually did is there's an organization called the OECD that puts together data on kind of the countries we compete with, the industrialized countries. And they actually put the data together, and they had, a couple dozen countries. It turns out, you know, there isn't data everywhere on what teachers get paid or what even college graduates get paid. And Finland is actually not incredibly high on the list, but they're a bit above average, and we are somewhat below average. Countries like Canada pay substantially more. The one that's really noticeable is Korea, where teachers get paid a lot more than other college graduates.
Hmm. So when you look at different kinds, did you look at different kinds of professions? So you looked at teacher salary compared to other college graduates in different professions or in similar to teaching professions or what?
No. You know, this is actually just done generally for all college graduates. And, in fact, it misses a little something that is true in the United States, and actually I think Finland as well, which is many more teachers in the United States have graduate degrees than do most other college graduates. I think it's something like half, and even that's not accounted for. But let me tell you a little bit about why I think this is a critical comparison. And this is the right time of year because not only are schools, of course, starting, but colleges are starting.
Right.
And students are thinking about what kind of career might they like to have. And they think about all sorts of things. You know, they think about what they're good at. They think what they love doing. And they think about non-financial, but they also think about financial rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to get more of the really good students to move into teaching, then we need to make teaching more attractive. And there's lots of different ways perhaps you can do that, but, you know, basically in the United States, the way we make a profession more attractive is we pay people.
And we I'm sorry.
So teaching has lots of psychic rewards. It's also an incredibly tough thing to do, but those psychic rewards haven't changed. In fact, they certainly haven't gotten any better. So if we want to have more of the teachers, like the fair number of extraordinarily good teachers we already have, we have a lot, but we don't have nearly enough, then the first thing we need to do is make teaching a more attractive career. And, you know, I said we're talking right now, students are going back to college or starting college, but it's also true that teachers tend to bail out of teaching relatively early compared to most other professions. And a lot of that is they may like what they're doing, but at some point they're having kids, they're going to get a mortgage, and they bail out for something that pays better.
Yeah. You say in your article that you can predict one response to the facts. Teachers aren't motivated by money. They teach because they love it. Well, you can only love so much something so much before, you know, you have to pay your own bills, and love can't conquer all.
You are absolutely right. And, you know, it's sort of funny because there are a few professions where we all think somehow people are just doing it for love, you know, teaching, clergy, maybe being a social worker. Mm-hmm. And that does play a big role. I mean, it's absolutely true, but, of course, those things have always been true. It's not enough. And in most professions, nobody ever thinks of the idea that, oh, people will get really great people to do it just because it's so much fun. And, you know, think of being a Green Bay Packer.
Okay.
Hey, you know, you're kind of a hero to the community.
Yeah.
I'm picking the team because of where you are, but
thank
also because my understanding is it's kind of a particular team that really does have a special feeling in the community that more than some of the other teams do. You know, those guys get paid pretty well anyhow, and if Green Bay wasn't willing to pay good salaries, it would not have as competitive a team.
Right.
So nobody ever asks about the Packers or the Yankees.
You're right,
or
they don't.
Pop stars.
Exactly.
Somehow when it comes to teachers, we think that we can just ignore giving them good pay.
And my understanding from doing several shows on this is we've reached a point now where we are having problems recruiting and retaining students, teachers. As you just mentioned, a lot of people leave in their mid-20s to some other professions. And the number of students who are going into teaching when they start college is going down.
You are totally correct about that. It's worse in some geographic areas than others. And it is also worse in some subfields of teaching than others. So what I've seen on this suggests that there are two areas that are getting particularly hard to staff. One is STEM, the science and math fields.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can understand students who are willing to and able to master science and math in college, they have lots of opportunities. And even if they become teachers, they're likely to have lots of opportunities to leave teaching. The other area I'm told is a real problem at the moment is special ed, where, I mean, obviously you have to love what you're doing. It is such an incredibly tough and such an important job. But those people, you know, at some point can also go do something else.
So give us more of an outline, if you would, please, of where different countries stand, and if we can even be somewhat specific about how much money is being made. You mentioned Korea. Will you be astounded when we hear what teachers are making in Korea when you compare it to the U.S.?
Well, you know, I don't have an exact number. Let me give you an approximation.
Okay.
So in the United States, and you should understand these numbers aren't by any means perfect. Let's see. If we wanted to... Oh, I actually don't have Korea. So for lower secondary teachers, that kind of, I think, corresponds mostly to our middle school.
Mm-hmm.
We pay teachers about two-thirds of the average college earnings, and Korea pays about 25% over the average college earnings. Canada pays, I don't know, roughly 10% over average college earnings. Not all countries do. The Slovak Republic pays a little less than we do. I did some calculations on how much we would have to raise salaries in the U.S. These were for, like, high school teachers, just to match other countries. And, oh, I think France was about 50%. Switzerland was about 50%. If we wanted to be Hungary or Chile, we could actually pay a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say a way to think about this, which comes from being an economist. I think most people, when they think about how much people get paid, they think about qualifications, they think about fairness, they think about equity, they think about minimum decency. But, you know, we're not talking about minimum wage jobs here, so the minimum decency isn't really the issue. Economists actually tend to use those ideas of equity or qualifications to get some rough ideas, but the bottom line question is, are we getting enough good teachers at the current salary?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, you know, of your listeners, because they're teachers, they're also rural taxpayers too. You know, my observation is that we have quite a few just spectacular teachers, and we have a fair number of teachers who are okay. And we actually do have, unfortunately, some teachers who are really not so good. And we are now at a stage, there's lots of research that shows the single most important thing that schools can do to get do better by students is to have great teachers. Obviously, what parents do at home matters, but in the schools, of all the possible changes, it's having great teachers. So here's the sort of the bottom line on salaries. Right now, the U.S. education system works okay. We're kind of average. We didn't used to be average when it came to education. We used to be the world's leader. That's a lot of the reason why the United States is the world's leader in so many things is because we had a history of great education. We are no longer there. We're kind of average for an industrial country, maybe a little lower in the math and science side. If we want our education system to return to turning out the students who are best equipped for jobs, who are best equipped to be citizens and all those other things, we need better, more of the better teachers, and that's why we need to raise salaries. It's not to be nice. It's not really out of fairness, although I'm sure a lot of people are concerned about the issues of fairness. It's because we just need to attract and to retain a lot more of the kind of top teachers we already have some of.
Right. It is such an important, important job. Well, let's start with a Facebook comment that has come in. It's a little lengthy, but I think it describes what a lot of people are going through. When teachers mention how, this is from Tiffany, when teachers mention how little they make, a very common response is, well, why don't you find another job? Despite the incredible importance of teachers' jobs, a significant number of people think teachers make enough. But right now, we're living on my husband's teacher salary, and when our second baby was born in March, we discovered that we were eligible for WIC benefits. Refusing to adequately fund education means college-educated professionals need to take advantage of social welfare programs to get by. She also wanted to comment that she'd previously worked as the director of a public library and was paid $12 an hour part-time, no benefits, so it's not just teachers facing this position. The reality is that many of us have to give up on jobs we love and are good at because love doesn't pay the bills.
Well, I think that's well put. The interesting part of the comment is so many people say, well, why don't you go get a better job?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is, yeah, a lot of teachers do exactly that. And they tend to be pretty some people quit teaching quite early because they just discover it's really not for them. That's probably a good thing. The sooner they quit, the better. But past that, we see in general that better teachers are the ones who quit and go find another job. And I guess maybe that's fine for them, but it's not so good for our children. So the complaint that the Facebook poster is describing, I think she's totally right. A lot of people say that, but I think they haven't thought through the consequences.
The consequences are enormous, aren't they?
They're absolutely enormous. And you know what? Anybody who's had parents has had their kids in the public schools, deep down they know it. If you're lucky, you've had a couple teachers who are, you know, just, oh, my goodness, they're so wonderful.
Right.
And the odds are you've also had some teachers who, you know, you're not mad at. They're okay, but they weren't the so wonderful kind. And if you're really unlucky, you've had a couple bad teachers. But, you know, there are not large numbers of really bad teachers. Well, given how the tough job we want our public schools to do, we just need a lot more of the kind of really good teachers, the really great teachers that most of us have seen a few of. And we need to do something about that.
Our guest this hour is Professor Dick Startz. He's a professor of economics at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And he wrote a piece that we thought was worth talking about, Teacher Pay Around the World. And it starts with this sentence, American teachers are underpaid. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To your phone calls, 800-486-8655 is our number. And let's start with Lynn in Appleton. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi.
My daughter and my son-in-law, they were teaching up in Bayfield and in Washburn, and they kept the sizes of their classes were increased, their duties were increased, and they were struggling to make ends meet. And so they checked out the international schools. They went to a job fair, and they were accepted. They spent 2 years in the UK, and they have now been in Switzerland for 5 years, and they're going to stay there for five more years until they retire. And they're making substantially more money, and the benefits are incredible.
You must miss them, though.
Well, yeah, but I get to see them all the time, and the school actually pays for them to come here.
No.
The whole family once a year.
No kidding.
So they spend their summers here.
Oh, Dick, imagine that.
I've got to say this, this is one of these things, it's sort of great for the family, but the other side is, why are we in a situation where the young teachers feel maybe they need to go abroad for
right.
a career? I mean, it's pretty unusual. Most teachers not only stay in the United States, they mostly stay in the state where they grew up or went to college. But it's a great story. It's illustrating what one of our problems is.
Thank you so much, Lynn, for your call. Charlie in Milwaukee, hi. Charlie, are you there? Charlie is gone. We go to Mark in Richland Center. Hi, Mark.
Hey, thanks for the program. If we set aside the money question and ask, why do people either not want to participate or why do they leave? What if the people who want to be teachers also would like to have some say as to the curriculum? And yet, a lot of what we have been told in school, we know actually to be a lie. So Christopher Columbus didn't discover America. Right now, the curriculum in Arizona is trying to take away the history of Latino culture in that state. And the authoritarian structure of a school system, as described by John Taylor Gatto, who was New York City School Teacher of the Year, Gatto can tell you that the compulsory school system that we live in is a lie.
Dick.
Well, it is interesting because, as you began the show with, a lot of people hold up Finland as the exemplar. And part of what goes on in Finland is there is much, much less control over what individual teachers do. They, in fact, they hire, it's very, very hard to become a teacher in Finland. They hire really good people. They give them extensive training. And then to a great extent, they turn them loose. And I have to be honest, I think that most of the great teachers I've observed do tend to kind of go their own way.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
true.
So, I don't have data, but I tend to agree with Mark.
Isn't that true that the teachers who really made an impression, you can name them, I'm sure you can, they come to mind when you think about your best teachers in high school or whatever year, they had something that was unique and they saw something in you that was unique and, whoo, the two of you clicked and you found an interest that was their interest and they went a place that wasn't regulated.
That's right, and I do think that that's somewhat easier to do when you're paying enough to hire people who, I don't know if the right way to say it, you feel confident in turning loose. Again, that's That's anecdote. That's not data.
Mm-hmm. These comments are coming in on Facebook. Charles writes, this year my school district offered teachers a 0.12% increase, and they are committing $10 million to tech devices. And Tiffany writes, this is Dan who also writes, my district also is offering a 0.12% increase. Our negotiator says that comes out to about $64 a year.
You know, I can tell you because I looked up the government numbers for Wisconsin, which is after adjusting for inflation, Wisconsin's teacher salaries are about 5% lower than 15 years ago.
Really?
Yep. So, you know, there's all sorts of different ways to spend money in schools, and they may be good ways, but almost all of them that are going to work require a top-notch person to be doing them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, technology can be great or it can be a total waste. Do you have a teacher who's enthusiastic and trained and has all the know-how to use it in innovative ways? Same issue, which is much more controversial, is class size. So it's more fun to teach smaller classes. It is clearly better, but most of the evidence suggests that reducing class size is not nearly as cost-effective as finding a way to get a better teacher.
Hmm. Let's go to Christine next. Hi, Christine.
Hi there.
Hi.
Oh.
Sure.
I just thought I'd interject a little bit, a side story. I'm a substitute teacher in a small district in Huntington Beach, California.
Oh.
I make $105 a day, no benefit. And if I do a long term, it goes up to $120 a day, still no benefits. And I'll usually work mostly long term jobs. And I do it because I love it. And right now, there's teachers, I can't get a real job, as people, little quotes, real job teaching. So I continue to do the sub teaching. And there are days when I'll say to people, I love this so much, I do it for free. Which I know isn't very realistic, but, you know, that's the way a lot of teachers feel. We do it because we love it.
And would you prefer, Christine, to be a full-time teacher and you haven't found a position, or what's up with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, I just interviewed, and I'm in the candidate pool with my fingers crossed for enrollment to hopefully a couple more kids will form some more classes. And but school's starting in a week, so as every day goes by, I think chances for a new classroom opening up get less and less. So I already have lined up a seventh grade language arts class going from September to December.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll keep me out of trouble for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it doesn't pay the bills. In fact, if I had to do it on my own, I'd probably be living in a cardboard box under the 405 freeway. So, but, yeah, again, just a lot of us do it just because we love it.
Right. Dick.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I think what Christine is saying is really important. Teaching is a job you probably can't do well unless you love it. But the other part of what she said is also there is that, you know, I mean, what's sadder than there's somebody who loves teaching and is really good at it, and at some point they say, I don't want to live on my spouse's salary anymore, or I don't want to live in a cardboard box. And they're going to give up what they love and what they do well to do something else because they do need the money.
Thanks, Christine. I hope something comes through for you. Let's go to Cal in Brookfield. Hi, Cal.
Hi. I'm a retired science teacher teaching chemistry for over 20 years. And in that time I taught, I don't think I ever made over $50,000 except for the very end of my career. Yet teachers, particularly chemistry teachers like I was, are the foundation of many of these high-priced jobs. Maybe I should be getting a cut off of their high salaries after they leave my classroom.
Did you ever think of leaving the classroom, Cal, to find something you knew you probably could make more money at?
Not really. I enjoyed teaching. I earned enough money, but at the same time, I see people that with one degree as an engineer getting six-figure salaries, and yet as a teacher back in my day, I've been retired for about 11, 12 years now, there was no way for me to earn that kind of money as a teacher. Yet I'm the foundation for these people getting these higher salaries.
You know, I think Cal is, I mean, besides being just right, it's also really worth pointing out, this gets back to a question that you raised earlier, you know, there are shortages and difficulties getting people are different in different areas, and chemistry, math, other science areas is one of the ones where it's hardest. And a big reason why it's one of the ones that it's hardest is because people who major in those things in college, they've got lots of opportunities. And, you know, we don't want to have teachers only coming from the ranks of people who don't have lots of opportunities. We want to compete for them. And I have to say, as a college professor, I teach economics. We really want our students, when they come in as freshmen, to have had good basic mathematical and quantitative training. And very often we don't see that. And some part of that is that there aren't enough of the teachers doing the kind of thing that Cal did.
Thanks, Cal. How do we determine, Professor Starts, what is equitable for teachers? I mean, how's that even, how do we even come up with that as people who live in America?
Well, you know, one reason that's a really good question is you think about how most businesses determine things. You know, you look at data for what other comparable professions pay and all sorts of things like that, but then the bottom line is you offer to pay something and you find out if you're recruiting good enough people. Well, public employees and specifically school teachers don't really work like that, right? Because there's a to some extent a monopoly, and there's a limit because of the tax base. In many areas, there's a negotiation between the teachers union and the school districts. In many areas, there isn't a teachers union. You know, if you look at just roughly people with similar qualifications, it certainly appears that we should be paying teachers more. If you look at the question of are we getting the people we want, then it's absolutely clear we should be paying teachers more. It's hard to know exactly how much more, but it's probably a fair amount. One thing that does need to be said is that, in general, public employees, and specifically teachers, do get better benefits than most other people do. They tend to get relatively good medical plans, and historically, they've gotten pretty good pensions, better than other people. Now, that latter is not quite so true anymore, and it's also for people who don't become full career teachers. They don't get such good pensions. So there is a little bit of room. Perhaps we should be having a little bit less in benefits and more in salary, but fundamentally, we would need to make the decision that we would raise taxes if necessary and pay teachers more. A few years ago, I did some calculations which suggested, this is only a rough number, that on average we should raise teacher salaries 40%.
40%?
That's a whole lot. Yeah, no, it is.
Really?
It's a whole lot. However, the best I could do on these rough calculations, if you looked at how much that would probably improve teaching, how much that would then improve students' income, it meant that over the next 20, 30, 40 years, as students moved into the workforce, they would be earning enough more that their taxes would be enough more to more than pay back for all of the money. But we're not so good at making decisions to invest in people now in order to make the economy and the country as a whole better off in the next 20, 30, 40 years. So it's a tough political problem.
Rhonda, our next caller in De Pere. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi.
Hi.
Another great show on education, Kathleen. Keep up the great job. Look, I wanted to say, in the community, kids grow up and they want to be a doctor, a fireman, police, teacher. They're all pillars of the community. However, only one in that equation is paid relatively well, and that is the doctor. The firemen and the police and teachers are all about the same. Now, teachers put a lot of schooling in as well. Doctors, it's more of a privatization. Maybe that's why. But the other thing, too, is he touched base on pension. Here in Wisconsin with Act 10, you know, insurance went up. Pensions, you had to pay more into that. And the big thing about teachers is districts get a ton of free overtime. Teachers do not punch out at 4 o'clock. They are salaried. But if you figure the ones that are in the summer, there's teachers that stay till 10 at night to get ready for the next day. When you look at the free overtime in the Green Bay area, I know for a fact, teachers just put in far more than they are paid. And I personally left at 52 and kind of looked away from the money I left to write about it. And I wrote a book about the whole teaching experience called Being Schooled. The bottom line is we don't work a 40-hour work week for teachers.
Dick.
Yeah, so there's actually some data that backs you up. A couple years ago, somebody used some federal survey data and asked how many hours across the whole year, because teachers not only often stay late and they're unpaid, but they do things in the summer to prep and all sorts of other things. And very roughly, teachers appear to work the same number of hours as other college-educated workers. You know, it's not quite clear how accurate the data is, but that's the best number. Having said that, I want to disagree with you, Rhonda, just a little bit. The good teachers work incredible numbers of hours, right? And they're not getting paid for it. You know, they're grading papers. They're preparing at home. They're going to the school concerts and the basketball games. They're sometimes helping a student outside of school. There's all sorts of things. But not every teacher does that. There are teachers. There are a lot of teachers who they're probably working a few more hours than they're getting paid for, but maybe not a lot. And I think we have to be honest and admit that the teachers that we all look up to are working enormous numbers of hours, but not everybody.
Thanks, Rhonda. Gay in Madison. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm going to just be very blunt about this. I taught for 30 years at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, and I became academic staff. I had an appropriate criminal degree, but I wanted to raise my son, so I would not teach full-time after he was born, and I could not be converted to tenure track. So that's fine. I made that decision. I was paid very little compared to other professionals and compared to my degrees in preparation. I loved my job. My students were great. My, you know, for the most part, my colleagues were terrific and treated me as if I were the same as full professors or professorial staff. But when Walker came in and began his subtle and not so subtle war on education, I was almost old enough to retire anyhow. And I decided to get out while the getting was good, because there had already been a work speed up. There had already been teaching five classes per semester. And I was an English teacher. You cannot adequately get enough writing out of any student and grade it and be a good teacher if at that speed. You just can't do it. And so everybody cut back, and, of course, the students suffered. So I feel as if there's a pretty clear mark in this state when the war on education began, and it began under Walker and in my district, Steve Noss, and a few other people who overtly disrespect the university system, do not believe we're providing much of anything of worth, and are determined to sort of meddle in it, in tenure, any kind of security we have, and cut into the pension.
Thanks, Gay, for your call and your concerns. Do you find that this is a political issue in some ways? Gay described a war on education in the state of Wisconsin. There are some who believe that that's definitely the case, that there have been some changes to the UW system and certainly to teachers' salaries and what they pay in for benefits. Is this a controversy taking place in many other states that you know of, Dick?
Well, I will have to. I mean, I don't follow Wisconsin politics closely, but we'll have to say there's been lots of somewhat joking and somewhat not joking discussion out here in California about, gee, it's time to raid the University of Wisconsin. Mm. Look, it's absolutely political and everywhere. And that's because, you know, 90% of students are in public schools. They're paid for by the taxpayer. Their decisions in some states, it's at a very local level. In some states like California, it's largely at a state level of deciding how much we're going to pay and what we're willing to do in taxes. And so it is, every year it is a political issue, but I do think it's one where we've fallen into some complacency, and I think it is also one that, you can actually look at poll numbers. People think that schools in general are basically mediocre, but if you ask people about their very own school, they tend to like it. And so we all kind of remember those special teachers you were describing earlier and forget about needing more of them.
Gay, thanks so much for your call. Ellen in St. Francis, hi.
Hi. Thanks again for the show, Kathleen.
Sure.
You do such a great job. A few points I'd like to make. I'm a retired technical college teacher, and I taught for probably about 30 years overall in my career, and I was paid very well, and I had excellent benefits. But it just amazed me the number of times when someone learned about my salary, I was told to my face, I make too much money, that I was overpaid, which just amazed me. Another point I want to make is that this war on education in Wisconsin is just, it has no good end. I mean, I talk to young people all the time. Some of the biggest offenders of this low pay are the Catholic Church and charter schools. I meet young people all the time. My son just started a job. Although he started a job just yesterday, his starting salary is $41,000. The better public schools in this area, that's what they're starting at, maybe $44,000 or $45,000. But typically, I've talked to people that work for private schools, that work like for the Catholic Church or charter schools. They don't even start. They starting salary $27,000. Hmm. I've met teachers who work for like say a Catholic high school. They've been there 15 years. They don't even make $35,000. It's just unbelievable, these poverty-level wages. I mean, you know, the Pope seems like a wonderful man, but, boy, he needs to start in his own backyard. And we need to get back to what we used to be. Education is so important. It affects every aspect of our society and our well-being, and it's just so important. And I'm told that in Wisconsin, I've talked to some administrators where they used to have 100 applicants for one job right now, one job opening. Now there's 10. I can remember back in the day I'd apply for a job, there'd be 350 applications for one job. You know, now it's just entirely changed. And some places are really great, some places are very challenging, and we have to do a better job. We just have to. And thank you so much for the show and for your guest.
Thanks, Ellen. Professor Starts.
It's awfully well said.
All right. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. Our guest says American teachers are underpaid. More specifically, American teachers are underpaid when compared to teachers in the nations that we compete with. And he's done a lot of graphs here comparing how we are with Finland, everybody's favorite educational success story, and a country not noted for paying its teachers especially well, but better than what we are paid here. So we're looking at this issue as school is about to start and has in some places already started. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And the guest is Dick Starts. He's a professor of economics at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And we'll be back with you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, let's go to Sonia. Hi, Sonia.
Hi there. I homeschooled for a couple of years because it was so very important to me. My brother teaches in Germany for more pay and more money and more respect. But they have a more homogeneous society, or they had a more homogeneous culture. Now that's changing, and he's going to be getting out of the teaching profession there. Is it political? Yes. We need to start diverting resources to teaching. One great teacher, I remember one amazing teacher I had for math, and I adored math the rest of my life. It turned me to a profession that used math. One teacher, just one, in any child's life is, I think, in so many ways more important than perhaps their parent at a given time in their life. And one key teacher must be supported enough. We've got to draw in the best people in order to pull kids into academics. They've got to love the stuff. They've got to learn to love it. And the only person who can do that is one great teacher in one subject. Hmm. Maybe they have one homeschool teacher who guides their whole thinking for the whole day. But we need to divert a lot more of this money that's floating around in the country on graft, corruption, CEO pay, and push it into education.
Professor Stertz.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, the thing is, I mean, first of all, I think everybody who's been in a school or close to school knows that what Sonia was saying is absolutely true. And then somehow, and this is the political part that I don't entirely understand, when we then come down to saying, well, should we do something about it? We haven't been. On top of all of these other things, I think the prestige of being a teacher has fallen some. I think that's unfortunate, but it doesn't matter whether it's fair or not. And the other thing which has to some extent made a big difference over the last, say, 40 years, teachers are predominantly something like three-quarters women. Well, if you go back 40 years and you were an educated woman and you wanted to be out in the workforce, you know, unfortunately, you didn't have a whole lot of choices. Right. You could be a teacher. You could be a nurse. A small number of women were able to break through and other things. Well, we got that problem fixed. But what that means is all those, you know, the daughters or granddaughters of all those incredibly talented women who were once teachers, some of them become teachers, but a lot of them are going to go off and do other things. And that makes the recruiting of top people that much harder.
Gary writes on Facebook, I'm all for valid scientific comparisons, but you can't compare salaries relative to other professionals in a country and then take that comparison to the U.S. without comparing the normal hours worked in other countries for teachers and other professions. What is the teaching year number of workdays in Finland and Korea? Korean schools may be in session all year long. Korean teachers working hours similar to other professionals in Korea. In the U.S., he writes, teachers work significantly fewer hours than the average professional in other areas. Perhaps going to full-year schools will provide the pay increase necessary for teachers to make competitive salaries.
Well, first of all, the general point he's making is totally fair. You do want to think some about how many hours people are working. You want to be a little careful. As I began, this is not about fairness. This is about, are we getting good enough people? Now, the suggestion he's making is perhaps if we had teachers in classes many more hours and paid them much more, maybe we would then get better people. I think he's right about Korea that teachers teach more hours, though I'm not sure. In Finland, I'm fairly sure teachers teach fewer hours than in the U.S. It varies a lot around the world, but we are not an especially low number of hours compared to others. The question about comparing to professionals is fair. You know, over the last decade or more, the average number of hours professionals have been working has actually been rising. And as I said, the best data we have says that teachers work about the same number of hours as other college-educated people do. To be honest, I suspect that that's a little bit off, and that at least people on the professional or the top end probably are working a little bit more. So I think there's some fair point to what he's saying.
Barbara in Delafield, hi.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Barbara.
Yes, you can hear me all right. I'm talking. I've got the speakerphone on.
I'd prefer that you not use the speakerphone, Barbara, because we can hear you better. Is that possible?
Just a minute.
All right. I hope it's less than a minute.
There we go. You're better this way?
Yes, Barbara. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay, good. I'm a retired principal, and I was looking at writing on school boards, and I have two, when I looked at it, I had two series. I did not finish it, okay? I did all the coursework, but I didn't totally finish this piece. But I was looking at white school board members go on the school board and how much do they really know about education. And the other thing was that I felt that we're setting up the community really against the teachers because of how we pay. It goes on the tax roll for the houses. So every time somebody says the teachers need a raise, people are up in arms because it's going to cost them more. We need to figure out a way, maybe a value-added tax. I don't care what it is. Where the teachers are in charge of, like, the new school, you're the educator, maybe the doctorate. And look, instead of the school board members, who so many of them, the ones that I interviewed, a lot of them, they were using it as a stepping stone to get to other political positions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Barbara. She brings up a really interesting point, too, and that's, you know, so much of a teacher's salary is paid to the property taxes, and it's an unfair kind of arrangement from district to district all over the state. There isn't a state level here, and there are some districts probably who can afford to pay more than others. It's kind of complicated, and maybe we need a new way to pay teachers, Dick. Do you think?
You know, I think there's something to that, but let me give you some warnings about that.
All right.
So in the East, in general, it is true that school taxes and teacher salaries are quite local. In a good part of the West, this is true in California, it's true in Washington, it may be true in some other places, there is largely statewide funding. This has not, and it was exactly put in for the kind of questions that are being raised, that it's so unfair that, you know, basically wealthy districts can pay a whole lot better than poor districts. Well, what sort of happened over time is that everybody leveled down. So the idea was the poor districts would be brought up, and the truth is, in this on the political side, what happened is there are a lot of places where people are willing to vote reasonably high taxes. One, because it's their own kids to get educated, and two, because it increases property values, and they know that. And so, while they may not like it, they are actually willing to pay high taxes.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the taxes were statewide and weren't just going for their own kids and their neighbors' kids and weren't going to make a difference in their own property values, all of a sudden they're voting for people who vote for lower taxes to support the schools. So it's, again, a political problem, but you got to be very careful about thinking about what are better ways to arrange to do school financing.
Mm. Thanks, Barbara, for your call. Andy in Soldiers Grove, hi.
Hi. I guess everything here seems to be very pro the profession of teaching, but I for one, work in the field of agriculture. I'm going on 38 years old here next year. And like I say, farmers don't make much money at all, and we feed everybody, unless you've got a garden on your own. Another point I'd like to make, too, is I went through public school, and I have to say I was in AT classes as well, and I felt completely disappointed and let down by the education I got. And I think most teachers, though it sounds noble and everything to want to educate these young minds and everything, I disagree with beating up, as a previous caller had mentioned, on homeschooling. I think it's far superior, and the education, if the parents are involved anyways, you're going to get a higher quality outcome, hands down, just because you have more time and a more intensive education. And to wit, I would also point out that the idea of putting by just raising the wage, which is, you know, politically, that's a typical left-wing tactic to garner as many votes as possible. It will do nothing. We can raise a wage on every profession to $1,000 an hour, and all it will do is drive inflation and raise costs everywhere, and you will lower the purchasing power of whatever currency you may be trading in. So with that said, I don't see that these are, you know, you can poo-poo Walker and Act 10 all you want, but the point is that we all have to live in reality.
All right, I need to hold you there. We're almost out of time. Dick, you want to respond?
Yeah, first of all, the point about inflation would be entirely true if somebody were talking about raising all salaries, which would be nice, but as he says, it would just be inflation, wouldn't do anything. We're talking about paying teachers more compared to other people. There's no reason at all why that is inflationary. The other thing that Andy has said, and I think is frankly valid, is people go in, they see the schools, they have experiences in the schools, and while they may have some great stuff, they also do have a lot of stuff that's mediocre, and that makes them very reluctant to want to see people get raises. And so a hard part of this discussion
right.
is talking about if you're going to have much better salaries, how are we going to find ways to make sure that those go not just across the board to everybody in all conditions?
Thank you, Professor. We're out of time. I have to say goodbye. Thank you so much. Professor Dick Starts, Professor of Economics at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Thanks to Marika Safal for producing this hour, KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios. Tomorrow, the first question we ask tomorrow, one, is what has happened to Christian intellectuals? And then, would you want to live another 100 years?